It's time to put on your sleuthing cap, feel nail-biting dread, and face heart-racing fear. This is Queer Writers of Crime, where you'll get book recommendations and hear interviews with LGBTQ authors of mystery, suspense, and thriller novels. Here's your host, Brad Shreve.
Rob Osler, it was great having you as a guest on this month. We talked about your book, Devil's Chew Toy, but today you are going to recommend a book to us. So who are you going to recommend?
I am going to recommend the latest from John Copenhaver, The Savage Kind.
Very good. Let's hear about it. As if people haven't heard about it, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, right out of the gate, you know, the book deservedly won this year's Lambda Literary Award for Best Mystery. It was also nominated as a finalist for Best Historical Mystery at this year's Left Coast Crime, which I was lucky enough to attend, and actually where I got to meet John for the first time. And it's also just a nice thing to be able to recommend a really great book from somebody who's a genuinely nice person.
Yeah.
Right? That's always a bonus. I'd say that it was a finalist for Best Historical. The setting is 1940s Washington, D.C. Right out of the gate, I would say that the story, in a word, is juicy. It made me think of like really good layers of baked lasagna, right? It's just like one delicious layer after the next. The first layer is the relationship between these two 17-year-old girls. One is Philippa. She's new to town. She doesn't really have any friends. You know, you just kind of picture her alone at the lunch table, right? Kind of thing. I mean, that's not like a scene in the book, but I mean, that's just kind of the way I picture her. She's got a good heart, pretty much keeps to herself. But she's immediately intrigued by this, you know, kind of girl across the cafeteria, Judy. And when she gets the scoop on Judy, you know, one of the other girls describes her as like, well, yeah, you know, she kills cats by, you know, dropping bricks on them. You know, whether this is true or not, you know, that's the reputation Judy has. So Judy is this kind of aloof but edgy girl. If it was present day, I would imagine Judy would be like a goth. Right? So you have this kind of tension, and again, this kind of juxtaposition that's kind of interesting between the two girls' personalities. So there's that going on, this kind of burgeoning friendship and Philippa trying to kind of woo Judy by, you know, getting her to be friends with her. So you have that element of the story going on. You have another element in that the two girls together are absolutely enamored by their English teacher, who they call Miss M. So then you have this adult, you know, older adolescent dynamic between Miss M and the girls. And all of this, mind you, is going somewhere, right? It's like layer upon layer leading to this really intricate, you know, plot at the heart of which is the mystery. Then you have family drama on both sides because Judy's adopted, and her sister, who, well, it wouldn't really be her sister, but her parents actually had a first child before Judy was adopted, who was murdered, was abducted and murdered. So you've got this kind of cold case thing happening on the side, and all of these angsty, juicy teenage things going on in the mind of Judy, because is she just really the replacement for the sister that was the biological child of, you know, her parents? So you've got that juicy thing going on. You've got Philippa and her parents, which is a little more less fraught, certainly less fraught than Judy's relationship. And then in the midst of all of this, is John kind of, you know, like kind of sets this all up, then a boy is found murdered. And that's really the real inciting incident. And then the girls take it upon themselves to start poking around as amateur sleuths, but not in any kind of nice Nancy Drew way. These two girls are as willing to almost commit crimes as they are to solve one. So it's very tense, it's very dark, it's very brooding. it's just, as I describe it, it's just a juicy lasagna, satisfying book. There also is an overlay of like 1940s, as I say, it's set in Washington, D.C., with kind of the moral tone of J. Edgar Hoover's FBI. And so you really do get the flavor of that time in America in which these girls are living their lives and being 17-year-olds. And just from so many perspectives, it's a satisfying read and so well crafted and so artfully told. And that is The Savage Kind by John Copenhager. I highly recommend it.
Well, I have been negligent that I have not read the book, though I did read Michael Nava's book and I read P.J. Vernon's book, and both were outstanding. And the fact that John Copenhager won the Lammy, I finally bought the book and we'll be diving into it very soon. So thank you.
Yep. No, I appreciate the opportunity to give that a well-deserved plug.
Well, I'm back for another book recommendation. And Philip, I want to thank you again for joining me.
Always happy to be here with you, Brad.
It makes it so much easier when I have somebody to bounce things off of. I have a book that I'm going to recommend that I just love. But I'm going to give some backstory.
Okay.
But don't worry, it's not going to be like the 20-minute thing I did with Lawrence Block. If for no other reason, it's 105 outside, and because I'm recording, I have to have the air conditioner and the fans off. So we want to wrap this up. But what I want to say, when I started the show 3 years ago, I didn't know much about podcasts at all. Hardly ever listened to them. I don't even know if I listened to one. But I knew I wanted to get the word out about queer crime fiction, and I thought, I've heard these podcasts. That's kind of a cool way to do it. So I started the show. Well, Justine, who's been with me from the first episode, she's been a podcast fan since before we met, and she regularly recommends shows she likes to me, and sometimes I agree with her, and sometimes I don't, but one day she recommended Christopher and Eric, and it has Christopher Rice and Eric Shaw Quinn, and Christopher and Eric are longtime best friends, and it really shows. You can tell they're not faking it, and what their show is every other week, they do a true crime, and I am no fan of true crime shows. They're all the rage in podcasting.
They are.
I don't find them that interesting, but they do this true crime with a twist, where unlike some shows, they don't research the crime, which I think almost always is a murder. I can't think of an episode where it wasn't a murder. They don't do the research. What they do is watch crime investigative shows like Dateline and shows like that. Mm-hmm. And then each week they come back and they talk about the episode, which may sound kind of strange, but they always question things that seem to be missing from the report and that didn't make sense, that they felt like information was missing. They go into depth about the production values of these shows. And it's hilarious when they describe the, you know, like the $10 budget reenactments they do. Just fun to listen to. It's like listening to two buds just going back and forth. So I highly recommend Christopher and Eric. In fact, I'm going to tell you, this guy that wasn't into podcasting, I subscribe to 32 podcasts. I don't listen to all of them. I pick and choose.
I hope not.
No. I pick and choose every week the ones I want to listen to most. I only get listened to, I don't know how many every week. Not 32, I can assure you. I have 3 shows on auto download every week because I know I'm going to listen to it no matter what. And one of them is Christopher and Eric. So that tells you how much I love the show. So go listen to the show. Now let's get back to books here. Do you remember 2 years ago when I had Christopher Rice as my guest?
Sure, yeah.
Well, I don't know if you still listen to the show, but last month Justine recommended a recent novel by Christopher called Decimate.
Right, yep.
Okay, so you do listen to the show. Good.
I'm not just on it. I'm a listener too.
Well, Christopher is not the only author on the show. When he was my guest, I asked him to name a novel that he believed is underrated. And he said the book is Right Murder by his co-host, Eric Shaw Quinn. It's been on my to-be-read list ever since. And you know how I keep saying my Kindle is going to explode? Well, it is. It really is. But after 2 years, I finally got around to reading Right Murder.
Yeah.
And Christopher couldn't be more right. I commented on Christopher's Instagram page. He had a post and I said I was reading it. And he responded, he said, "You're going to love it and be ready to laugh." And he was absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun mystery and a funny, funny novel.
Wow.
And one thing I like about Eric on the show, Eric is the more cynical one. Mm. It really shows in the novel. And I'm going to give you one of the things that he says. "All waiters in LA are going to be famous someday. They are constantly surly and indifferent because of the waiting job they've had for 15 years is only temporary." It is so true.
That's a good quote.
And, you know, I've said many times I don't like books with a lot of description. I'd rather they give me just a taste of the setting and allow me to fill in the blanks myself. Right Murder is filled with description. And I didn't notice it mm-hmm. until I was almost done because it's absolutely necessary. Mm. If you don't live in LA and don't, I don't want to say mingle with Hollywood, but Hollywood's all around you, he really gives you a taste. I mean, the city is probably the primary character in the novel. For example, in West Hollywood and the surrounding parts of LA, there are many unique older apartment buildings that are kind of scattered throughout. And they're the apartments where like the starlets lived in the 40s and 50s and 60s, like Marilyn Monroe and Shelley Winters. I don't know if people know they were really good friends and they were roommates, I think, in West Hollywood. Well, he gives those outside of LA a real feel for that and throughout all of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
When the novel begins, we meet Paige, who is a male and a short-time television writer. He's a ghostwriter. He's authored one novel, but he's really aspiring to be known. And he had a one-time relationship with an actress named Angela. Now, I want to ask you, mm-hmm. I'm going to say her name and tell me if this sounds like an actress you know. Her name is Angela Patterson.
Hmm.
I'll toss out another hint. She's known for playing blonde bimbos, had a rock star. I can't remember if he was a boyfriend or a husband.
Okay.
Who's known for his large appendage that was shown on a set
tape. Oh, of course. Which and also was shown recently on Instagram.
Well, the rest of them ain't so hot, but it is impressive.
It is.
She's Pamela Anderson for the most part. Her career, it wasn't as good as Pamela. She was always the blonde bimbo.
Of course.
But that's really where that identification begins, just to kind of give you an idea of who she is.
Okay.
Paige and Angela at one time were an item, and it didn't end well. And when the novel begins, Angela is engaged to a billionaire Hollywood bigwig named Seth. And so the book starts out with Paige going to their party at what he called the Argyle Hotel. I don't know if you're familiar with the Chateau Marmont.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's almost 100 years old. All the Hollywood mucky-muck have gone there. It's still very exclusive. It's probably known best that it's where John Belushi died.
Mm-hmm.
So the Argyle is kind of, to me, it's the Chateau Marmont.
Right.
So they're having this big event and they're outside in the carpet and Paige shows up uninvited. And I won't say what it is, but he causes this hilarious incident with her for all the paparazzi to see and ends up all over television. So that's how much they care about each other. Part of Eric's cynicism that comes across is his descriptions of Hollywood and the shallowness and the phoniness, but also its reality. Celebrities are not much different than us. And I'm going to tell a story. Back when many years ago, when I worked in a hotel, I was a bellman in the lobby, and Van Halen was playing in town. Mm. Eddie was walking across the lobby about to go out the door, and Valerie Bertinelli ran with their baby to Eddie and said, "Give your daddy a kiss goodbye. He's on his way to work." And I thought, he is on his way to work like the rest of us do. They're every day, but at the same time, there is that fakeness.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you right now, it is Angela's fiance, Seth, that gets murdered. And Paige asked her why she murdered Seth. And she says, "Why would I kill him? I was just about to marry a 3-picture deal. In 6 months, maybe I'd kill him, but not now." And this stuff is like throughout the whole novel. It's like almost every paragraph, there's something like this. So what happens is after the incident on the carpet, Paige is in bed and somebody comes into his apartment and he thinks he's about to be attacked. And it turns out to be Angela. She's covered in blood. And because Seth has been killed in their place, which happens to be right next door. Well, the murder weapon happened to be a figurine that was in Paige's apartment. So clearly somebody broke into his apartment to then go and kill Seth. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple things that worry them. First of all, they're worried they may be next. Mm-hmm. Second of all, obviously, they're going to look like the killers. And that's really how it begins, that they have to work together to solve the crime. And that's really all I'm going to tell. It is just very funny. And what's great, it's not only funny, it's a damn good mystery. Mm. There's lots of twists and turns. It has a satisfying ending. It's just damn good. One thing that is said in here that writers will connect with, and maybe some readers too, is this is in the novel. As Page began to pitch ideas for a second novel to his publishers, he found that not only was there little or no market for fiction, but what marker existed was gutted with bad fiction foisted off as memoir, known in less literary circles as lying. And his take on Hollywood and the LA area and the celebrities, it's just peppered throughout and it's all funny. I highly recommend it. Eric is writing a sequel. This novel came out in 2015. I don't know what's taking him so long.
Mm.
He is writing the second book in the series. He was going to be a guest on this year, but there is a delay getting the book out. But he will be my guest when it comes time. So I look forward to that. And it'll probably be sometime in the spring. So we'll have to wait and see. It's called Right Murder by Eric Shaw Quinn. Dia Poirier. I'm very glad. I always like it when the guest does a book recommendation and I have no clue as to what books they're going to recommend. So I'm glad you didn't tell me, but you did tell me you're going to do more than one.
Yes.
Hit us.
Okay. So I'm going to start out with a novel that is a little older, but is my all-time favorite novel. And very few people I know have read it. And I'm always trying to get more people to read it so that I can finally have someone to sit down and fangirl with about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so my favorite novel of all time is Diary by Chuck Palahniuk. I will say it's a little bit of a mystery, but all the way just weird. And weird in the best way that keeps you guessing in a way I've never had a book make me guess before. The book is centered around a woman who is reading through a diary that her husband left her after an attempted suicide. Or she's writing the diary after the attempted suicide of her husband. And she gets this phone call. Her husband had worked as a contractor, and she gets this call from a previous client of his that her husband had taken a room out of their house. And she's like, what do you mean he took out a room? And the person's like, he walled it off. Like, the room is gone. And you're like, what? Like, why would a contractor like wall a room off? And like, he literally made it look like the room was never there. Like, repainted it, drywalled it, so it looked like that was just a flat wall as a part of the house. Whatever was behind it never existed. And as the novel unfolds, there's more of these strange rooms that he's renovated and taken out of houses and left these clues inside of the rooms. And it is absolutely fascinating to see the main character, who's an artist, on this weird little island, and how she's uncovering what her husband did before he attempted suicide. And it is everything I ever want in a book. It's perfection.
Perfection.
Perfection, yes. I cannot think of a single thing that should be or could be changed. It is perfect.
Okay, so because you love this book so much, you're probably going to hate me for bringing this up. Isn't he the same author that wrote Fight Club?
He is, yes.
Okay.
And in my opinion, this is the best book he's written.
Well, I haven't read any of his, but I love the movie Fight Club, so now I've got to read his book.
Choke is also very good. I liked Choke better than Fight Club as well, but I think Diary is the pinnacle, the best thing he has written.
And you have more?
I do. So I'll go through these other ones a little faster.
Oh, no, take your time.
Okay. Also on my list is She's Too Pretty to Burn by Wendy Hurd.
Yes.
This is a fantastic YA novel that's based, I think, a little bit around The Portrait of Dorian Gray. It is really great. Got some artistic characters. I always love a good artist character. Some murders, some stalkers. It is a great, fun book.
Yeah, Wendy was on when that book released, and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. Wendy's great.
So if you haven't listened to that episode, go back and listen to it.
I'll have to. I didn't realize she had done an episode. I'll have to listen to that. After that, I have Rich Young Widows by Kimberly Bell, Lane Fargo, Kate Holohan, and Vanessa Lilly. And this was such an interesting book. It's an audiobook that's on Audible. It's an Audible original, so it's free if you have a subscription. Set in 1985, it's about four women who are the wives of prominent lawyers who all die in a plane crash. And it's about these women working together to try and understand what their husbands were up to, because they were clearly up to some shit before they died. So it's really great. It's really fun. It's really cool to see a book set in the 80s. Then I've got Bathhouse by P.J. Vernon.
P.J. was on to discuss that as well.
Yeah, this is one of the few books that just gave me palpable anxiety. The entire time I was listening to the audiobook, I was just like so on edge, like, oh no, like what is going to happen next? And it's so rare that a book does that to me that I have to say chef's kiss, like phenomenal job. And then I have Kismet by Amina Akhtar. This is a newer book. It actually releases officially on August 1st, but it was an Amazon first read. So I read it that way, and it is amazing. It is a thriller set in a wellness community in Arizona, and I've never read a book set in Arizona, so it was so interesting. And I loved the characters. I loved how the story was told, and I was left guessing the whole time. After that, I've got Like a Sister by Kelly Garrett, which was also phenomenal. I really love that this is a very modern mystery. It's got Instagram Live. It's about a woman whose sister was a reality TV star, and she's found dead, and she's trying to understand what happened to her sister, who was a reality TV star. And so it's told through some Instagram Lives and different posts and a lot of speculation. And I absolutely love the way it played out. It was perfect and so, so interesting. And the audiobook was phenomenal. And then I'm currently reading No Gods for Drowning by Haley Piper, which is also phenomenal so far. It's a mystery crime novel that also has like some like American Gods feel to it. It's very, very interesting. And I love how quirky it is so far and the dark magical elements it has going on.
Well, we happen to be reading the same book right now.
Really?
Yes, because in just a few weeks, I have Haley that's going to be on the show. And that is the book that was sent to me.
Oh, awesome.
And I usually don't announce the guest on in advance because you never know what's going to happen. But, you know, they may have to cancel and reschedule. But I'm going to announce it today anyway, because I'm enjoying the book so far. I'm not very deep into it, but I am enjoying it so far.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's very different from anything I've read, and like in the best way.
And is that all of them?
Yeah, that's all of them.
You did a great job describing each and every one of them, and so briefly and engrossing. And you definitely got me turned on to Choke.
Yeah, you're going to have to read it. Read Choke, read Diary, and I would love to discuss.
People are probably tired of me saying this so often. I read a book every week for this show, and it really makes it hard for me to read books that I want. And I'm very happy that 99% of the time my guests have great books, so I'm not complaining. But I'm going to put Choke in there somewhere, and then we'll discuss it.
Awesome.
Maybe we'll have a special book discussion episode. I don't know. We haven't done that one yet.
Oh, that'd be so fun.
Well, thank you for the recommendations. I know that at least three of them are good ones.
Yep, they're all great books.
Well, thank you.
Yep, thank you so much.
Neil Plaxi, it is time for your book recommendation for this month, and I hope you have a book recommendation for us.
I do. Even though I know that your podcast is for queer writers of crime, the book that I want to recommend to your listeners is a little bit outside of that genre.
And you know what? That's okay. I always tell my guests, when you make a recommendation, you don't have to fit those rules. So you're okay on that.
This book is called Liebestrasse by Greg Lockhart. And there is a crime at the heart of this book because it is about two men falling in love during the Nazi era in Germany. Mm. But it really is a lot more than that. I really enjoyed it for a bunch of reasons, and I think it would be interesting to your listeners because of the historical queer content and because it's a graphic novel. I think one of the things that we have to do as queer writers and readers but particularly as writers, is make sure that we are engaging the next generation of readers. And the next generation of readers is reading a lot of graphic novels. And so Liebestrasse is a great book in that regard. I am recommending it because I'm thrilled to see more LGBTQ plus content in graphic novels. And maybe because as I get older, I have a shorter attention span. And so I want that kind of short, punchy work supported by graphics. And in this case, the art really supports the story, which is about a young American banker working in Berlin as the Nazis come to power. He and his gay friends are aware that bad things are happening, but they feel shielded from them until they don't. And that's where the criminal element comes in. You know, one of the men is arrested for homosexual activity. But I think it's important that we reach these readers where they are. And since they're loving the graphic novel format, let's go there. And if we can get them to read about the implications of the Holocaust for gay people, then that's a win for me. You know, to me, the graphic novel must be a lot like screenwriting, because you have a lot, you have to convey a lot of information through language that then is supported by the art. So as the writer, you really have to distill down what it is you want to say and work with the artist to have the art reflect that. So the writer has to convey as much as possible in only a few words, counting on the artist to convey the mood, the facial expressions of the characters, and all the background details that bring the story to life. There's a great section at the end of Liebestrasse in which all the parties involved discuss how they, all the parties involved, the author, the artist, the publisher, how they handled their own individual parts of the book. So that also, you know, alone was just a really interesting look at how a book comes together. So Liebestrasse, which means, I guess, Love Street in German, by Greg Lockard.
It's interesting that you brought up a graphic novel. A guest earlier this month, Dia Pereira, she and I had a quite long discussion about graphic novels. I don't know if you're familiar with Orson Scott Card.
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm not going to say much about him as a person. He's not very gay friendly, but I can't deny that his science fiction is really well written. And I lived in Greensboro, North Carolina, and he lived in Greensboro, North Carolina. And he wrote a piece for the newspaper, and it was about reading in general. And he said, if your children are reading comic books or books that you just consider silly, keep your mouth shut. They are reading.
Yep.
They're involved in storytelling. People have been storytelling in different ways since the beginning of the time. Just be glad that they're participating.
You know, that was the thing that going back to when I did live in New York and I rode the subway, I was amazed at how many people were reading, whether it was a newspaper, a book. Today, it might be, you know, people reading on their phones. Reading is such an integral part of our society. And I didn't realize until I got to the community college that there were people trained in college level reading, in teaching students to read at the college level. And of course, we've scaled that back as we, you know, gradually expect our high schools to do that kind of stuff. But reading is just an amazing thing to consider. And I would tell my students this, you know, what you're seeing is a collection of dots on a page, and your brain is connecting those dots together to form letters, to form words, to form sentences, and then to convey to you what that means in the real world, what that sentence actually means. And you're doing that in the fraction of a second. Imagine how amazing it is that your brain can process like that. And the more you read, whatever it is, the better you get at reading.
Well said. That is true. And that is something interesting to think about. Thank you so much, Neil.
Thanks.
If you enjoy Queer Writers of Crime, let others know with a review. It helps build an audience and introduce more people to queer crime fiction. Apple and iTunes are where most people search for new shows, but if you don't use either, other apps that allow reviews include Podcast Addict, Overcast, and Spotify. Wherever you listen to podcasts, help spread the word to tune in to Queer Writers of Crime.